IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside the Cross Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and today we have a very special episode. One that we don't always do, but one that I'm very excited for. We are joined by Dana Dobie, who has some news to share. Dana, you are one of the most decorated players in all of women's lacrosse, all of international lacrosse, and in addition to all of your coaching acumen. What's the latest development in your playing career?
Yeah, so Terry, thanks for having me today. You know, I'm super excited about this like next phase in my lacrosse career and international career. But the biggest announcement today is, you know, we're hanging up the cleats, we're folding up the jersey, and we're throwing out that bad word retirement. But at the same time, I feel like I've given everything I possibly can to the sport as a player, and I'm so excited about maybe that next chapter and what that looks like, you know, off the field, off the floor, and even if it's just being a fan. I've not looked forward to this moment, but at the same time, the time has come, so retirement is in the air here.
So I know that this is going to be the most uncomfortable question I'm going to ask, and we will go through some of the elements of your career that will probably maybe show as opposed to tell. But when a player of your stature retires, one of the first places the conversation always goes is to legacy. And I'm just curious as to how you feel about it, what you've thought about it, and most kind of directly said, what do you want your legacy as a player to be?
Yeah, it's such a loaded question. I think when someone talks to me about like my personal legacy, I go to the players before me that have left such a strong legacy that has allowed me to, you know, stand on the shoulder of giants. And my biggest thing that I've always thought about when thinking of lacrosse and my time playing is I have been given so much by this sport that was gifted us by the Haudenosaunee people, and all I've ever wanted to do is try to give back more than I've received. So I hope if anyone, you know, is thinking about my career and what I've done for the sport, I just want people to know that I've done everything I can to give more opportunity to women's lacrosse players, female lacrosse players, and just lacrosse players as a whole, and that equal opportunity to compete, to medal, and to be on the world's largest stage of the Olympics. I think that's something that I'm most proud about before any wins or losses or medals. I think that's the biggest thing I look back on my career that I can hang my hat on and just say, you know, the sport is in a better spot.
We don't have a ton of these conversations with players who retire, but I really did want to have this one with you because, again, before getting into some of the individual elements of your career, the thing that has stood out as you've continued to compete is a very clear passion for playing the game. And the reason I feel that way is because a lot of the players, you know, play later into their career than others, largely to continue to kind of harness the feeling of the locker room or the competitive, you know, satisfying the competitive desire that burns within them. But you're coaching, so in some ways, you kind of have that, and you have access to that satisfaction. So to have continued to choose to play so much longer than many of your peers suggests to me that you just really loved it.
Love it.
Can you just speak to why you love playing lacrosse so much?
Yeah, and I think that hit me at such a young age, Sherry. Obviously, a Canadian, it's not a stereotype. We are hockey players. We're born, we put on skates, and, you know, we learn to skate when we learn to walk. But for me, there was always something about lacrosse season, and I would love to wake up and know that I got to put my hockey equipment away and I got to get my lacrosse equipment out. And this is back in the day when you didn't play year round. So just so much excitement around lacrosse season. And I just think I've always felt most myself when I pick up a lacrosse stick and when I go on the floor, when I go onto the field with my teammates. I feel like that is a moment for myself where I can just be a little bit of all the different elements within my personality, whether that's being like aggressive and competitive, or it's being like leading by being motivating and loud and proud. And, you know, I just don't think there's other areas within our lives that we get to kind of pull all those different aspects of our personality and put them all into one. And, you know, people always say to me, you were maybe born to play lacrosse. And that's how I've always felt. Just as soon as I pick up the lacrosse stick, there's definitely, you know, a spiritual element to this sport where I just feel so free and I just have so much fun. And having played, like you said, with some incredible teammates and playing under incredible mentors and coaches, there's just been no other better spot than in that lacrosse culture. And I know for me, everyone always said, Dana, you'll know when it's time to hang up the cleats or put the stick away. And it took until I was 40 years old to kind of get that feeling. I just feel so grateful that I was able to play for so long. Because like you said, there's nothing I love more than playing lacrosse, and the competing is the side piece. It really is the sport itself that I just have so much love and passion and gratitude for.
I do want to reflect a little bit. I know that this isn't the earliest days, but you know, maybe to an American audience, you emerged, in a very kind of what I would call interesting way, because you were a part of the effectively kind of first wave of Canadian players that were making their mark in college lacrosse in a way where it felt more like a trend as opposed to individual outliers, which, you know, we had seen kind of in the preceding couple decades. So when you reflect on your college career, starting out at Ohio University and then transferring to Maryland, what are some of the memories that come to mind?
Yeah, I played under a pretty solid Canadian group at Ohio University, and that was really how I found my feet at Athens, Ohio, just looking up to senior players that loved Ohio so much. And that was kind of like, are you kidding me? I have an opportunity to go to the U.S. and to earn a lacrosse scholarship and have this great opportunity to get an education and go to university and play lacrosse. And like you said, there were definitely a lot of more like one-off players in Canada, but no one really at that time that was playing at the highest level possible within the college ranks. And getting that opportunity to transfer to the University of Maryland, I think that was when maybe on the women's side, the Canadian players started to get a little bit more of a spotlight. And I just think for me, there were definitely players before me that could have been in that spotlight, but it might have just been the right place at the right time for me, getting a chance to transferred to the University of Maryland and play for Kathy Reese and Jen Adams that took over the program at that time. So I think more for me, it was more like the right place at the right time. Like I said, there were definitely a lot of Canadians before me that had kind of paved the way for me to be in that position.
So then after your college career, you joined a post-collegiate lacrosse ecosystem that was very oriented around international, and then later on, a burgeoning pro lacrosse scene that you were very much a part of all of the incarnations of. So how do you describe that first period, call it 2008 to 2015 or so, when the primary opportunity to continue to play was playing with Canada on your chest?
Yeah, I would say that like period of time was like pretty lonely, honestly, because like you said, all we had was international lacrosse. So you're out there training on your own every single day for like a 4-year stint, just preparing for like seven games and 10 days international world championship that came around every 4 years. So before we had that semi-pro UWLX opportunity to play, it was really just one-on-ones, jumping into practices, doing individuals as much as I could with my Loyola team, going back to the University of Maryland and try to get as much competition as I could in order to prepare for, you know, a world championship that everybody thinks you're at practice every other weekend or training camps every like quarterly or things like that. But without that semi-pro league or pro league, you were really just out there on your own, like trying to better your craft and get fitter and stronger. So yeah, those were some tough days for sure.
So then, as you mentioned, the kind of litany or sequence of opportunities to play, starting with UWLX, evolving into WPLL, AU Pro, and then most recently WLL. Yeah. How do you describe the way that the emergence of a pro lacrosse opportunity, I guess to use your term, kind of addressed that loneliness?
Yeah, it's just a, it's a wild ride, Terry, and I know a lot of collegiate athletes can talk about it, but anytime you transition from a huge part in your life and that's removed and you're trying to find, well, what's the next thing? You know, it's a really difficult transition. And this is before you had these incredible sports psychologists at your colleges, or this is before any of that mental health conversation was happening. So you're transitioning from being at the very top of your game, one of the best in the country, and then all of a sudden there's nothing. And fortunate for lacrosse players, we go into college coaching and you're still surrounded by that sport, but it's a really tough period when you just don't have any competition or any reason in that moment to continue to get better and be challenged in the sport that you've loved for so long. So I think if I didn't have the college coaching to fill in that void, I think that transition for me would have been a really difficult one. And one I know a lot of college lacrosse players, men's and women, hit every moment, every year once they graduate. So once we transitioned into having that opportunity to play the semi-pro, now you have something to really look forward to. And when you're training by yourself Monday through Friday, you have that purpose and you have that competition that's just going to make you better. I think that's the most challenging aspect for women's lacrosse players that we've faced for so long. You're at the top of your sport. You're playing the best lacrosse you could ever play at age 22, 23, and then there's nothing. So to look at where women's pro lacrosse is now and to think about this senior class in college right now, they're going to be graduating and they're going to be challenged straight away. They're going to be playing a sport and a level and discipline of the sport that is bigger, stronger, faster than what they're seeing in college. And now when you look at the rules at the college level too, they're going to have that freedom to play a discipline of the sport that's going to allow them to showcase just how athletic, strong, and dynamic they can be as athletes. So to think about what we didn't have is definitely disappointing when you think about that moment in your athletic life that you were in. But now you're just so encouraged and so excited for this next senior class. And, you know, the lacrosse we're going to see from someone as simple as a Izzy Skeen. We thought we saw the best lacrosse from her at Northwestern. Well, what are we going to see from her in the WLL? So I'm just so excited for them.
You're in a really unique position to speak to one of the things that I think is arguably the most fascinating development of pro lacrosse, which is in the pre-pro lacrosse days, you were evaluating athletes on the basis of how good they were in their pre-athletic prime. Because to your point, right, like they finished playing at the pinnacle of the sport when they were 22. And while, you know, we understand that these are tremendous athletes at 22 and 23 years old, you know, they still have a lot of aging curve. You know, most athletes peak when they're 27 or 28. For you, how do you feel like that journey unfolded in terms of while you were not practicing every day, how did you feel like your game improved over the course of the first 5 or 6 years after college? And then I want to follow up in terms of, you know, how you continued to maintain maybe after you've reached your athletic peak, but still obviously had a long way to go.
Yeah, I've always been such a student of the game, Terry. I love watching different levels of lacrosse. I love watching the men's and the women's and the differences between them and really pulling my box background into the field style of lacrosse too. But in that chunk of time where you're just focusing on what can you do every day to improve, I think for me back in those years where everyone was really focusing on their strength and conditioning and that kind of being all they did outside of their world championship and all they did prior to maybe their team camps, I was always like a lacrosse player first. So my time and my attention and my training was built around what does my lacrosse practice look like? How many individuals at Loyola can I coach where I'm playing offense and defense and going against that draw unit? And then outside of that, I've just been so lucky. I had Maura Norton, who's our strength coach here at Loyola, be my go-to girl from the beginning. So if it wasn't for her programming and her breaking down, all right, Dana, you're getting, you know, older or parts of your body are starting to break down at certain times, you know, let's change your programming and really focused on how can I continue to increase my strength? How can I continue to challenge my conditioning when I'm not practicing every single day? But I really do think the secret sauce is having an incredible physical therapist, which I did too. My boy Mike was my on speed dial, but just focusing on the lacrosse aspect of it. How can I continue to challenge my creativity? How can I continue to grow my lacrosse IQ? And as you get older, you better get smarter, or, you know, a young gun is taking your spot on that team for sure. So my training and my programming completely changed after college, because you're not practicing every single day. So you really got to be creative, and you got to be able to be disciplined, not motivated, to make sure that you're doing what you need to do every single day. But that lacrosse piece for me was I think the number one reason I was able to continue to play, because I never stopped. I just played every single day.
Discipline, not motivated, is something that many of us would benefit to have tattooed somewhere on our bodies. That one's going to stick with me for a while. But I hope you didn't just answer this question, and I'm just asking you to repeat yourself, but there's something a little bit distinctive about what it was like to play in your 30s. And you addressed the importance of, you know, changing your physical approach, and you addressed the role that you played as a leader. But, and especially because you ultimately like played in more disciplines, and we're going to come to the role that you played in developing sixes momentarily, but you know, you got the opportunity to compete at the highest level internationally in box sixes and in field in ways that even you hadn't in your athletic prime. So I guess what I'm really asking is, what have you learned as a athlete in your 30s that maybe you didn't understand and wouldn't have guessed when you were in your 20s?
Just that strength component. I think a lot of young athletes really rely on the conditioning and the speed and the agility. But as you get older, and once you hit, like, I think I felt great until maybe like 34. And then I was like, oh, okay, yeah, we're getting older here. Things are breaking down. But it really had to do with that strength program that I had from my coach, Mora, and building on all those little muscles, whether it was getting the strength as far as like what's the heaviest you can go, but more just like your range of motion and your mobility. That was the biggest thing. Once I hit 30, it was more not how much more can I do and how can I out-train and how can I out-work, but it was what specifically do I need to do that once I go to a world championship or once I'm at a training camp, I'm able to showcase the best of my athleticism at the highest level over a really long period of time in a short amount of days. So that's where it's just so different from college when you think about that. But I think that strength and the injury prevention for me, once you hit the 30s, you just realize you're not going to out-train any 18 to 22-year-old. So just don't even worry about it. And then just get a lot smarter behind the scenes.
And that's that. So I apologize for focusing so much on this, except for the fact that I find it really interesting. And I find it, again, to be one of the things that, you know, I don't want to say from afar, but from an intermediate distance, I observed about you because, you know, I'm going to use Brody Merrill as the point of contrast. And I don't want it to make it seem like Brody didn't play through injury. I'm sure he did. But, you know, when you watched Brody play late into his career, it was kind of like, it doesn't seem like he's struggling. Whereas with you, I mean, the amount of tape that you would put at different parts of your body, always, you just looked like a warrior is essentially what I'm trying to say. And what I'm curious about is the mentality. So obviously, you know, you have to prepare both from, as you've said, a strength development standpoint and from a recovery and rehab standpoint, but you also have to want to do it. How do you regard the way that you just strapped it on for your teammates when, you know, maybe some of your peers would have said, I can't play in this current condition?
I don't know. Maybe it was just because that's how always was, eh, Terry? There was just, you know, always a little nagging something. And when you have such limited opportunity to play, you know, there is no option to just be like, I'm going to sit this one out. Like, you're training 3 years for the year 4 world championship, you know, whether you have a torn calf or your Achilles is just kind of hanging on for dear life, or, you know, you have a tear in your patella tendon, whatever it is, you know, you've worked so hard for this moment, and there's no kind of there's nothing that's really going to hold you back unless, you know, you break your leg and it's impossible. So I think that's just where you just really take advantage of the little opportunities that you get, because they were so small over a long period of time that there was no way you were going to miss any chance to play and to be there for your team. And I just think being a captain for Team Canada as well, I could never ask my teammates to do something I wasn't going to do. So if it took a little KT tape or a little TLC to put it all together, whatever it did take, you know, I was going to be in that game or be in that practice and be there for my teammates. So no other option, really.
Well, I think the Americans kind of showed a different option, because if memory serves, they didn't send anybody from Towson to Birmingham, right?
No. That was...
how does that stretch compare?
Yeah, talk about... That's a little bit different from discipline to motivation. I know when we were transitioning from that Towson World Championship into the World Games, just knowing that and thinking that, you know, other parts of the world didn't think it was possible to do both, or other countries didn't think that it was attainable to do both and to medal, you know, that was something in our locker room that we just had so much pride. And knowing that for a national Canadian team, you don't get time together. You get 2 days before a world championship to figure your shit out, and then you're expected to medal. So for us, we used Towson as our building blocks to help us gain that chemistry as a team, to help us have that improvement in our systems and in our styles of play, and then really using that to propel us to Birmingham, Alabama, to showcase just, you know, what we always knew as a national team we could produce, but we just haven't been given the opportunity by our national team programming to help us build that chemistry and have that time together. So that was definitely more motivating, Terry, than our discipline, because knowing that from the USA, you know, really pushed us to, I think, be able to play at our best, knowing that people thought it was impossible. And maybe it was, but we got it done.
For those that are unaware, Canada emerged from that tournament with a gold medal. And it's a perfect segue into circling all the way back to the beginning of the conversation about legacy, because you mentioned, you know, the pride of having a role in helping get lacrosse to the Olympics and providing that opportunity for all the athletes. And for those that are unaware, you were part of the Blue Skies Committee that developed the discipline of sixes that is going to be played in the Olympics. And obviously this falls into the category of leadership outside of your on-field contributions. You haven't retired from being a scion and leader of lacrosse. But with that being said, obviously your voice as a player was instrumental into some of the decisions that were made when the discipline was being developed. How do you reflect on that and the role that you played as a player in terms of the development of sixes?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, World Lacrosse was sick of hearing from me about how me and my teammates and, you know, other world players around the whole globe just wanted to play a better version of women's lacrosse. For so long, we've been handcuffed to, you can't use these sticks and you can't play defense and you can't shoot this hard or you can't, you know, I remember getting a yellow card at a junior world championship in Towson for a behind the back and just thinking like, what is happening? Like, let us play. So having an incredible opportunity to be the vice chair of the Athletes Commission for World Lacrosse and to be able to represent all athletes, men's and women's, with this sixes discipline, to just talk about how can we bring together the best aspects of box lacrosse and field lacrosse and to put together a discipline that lacrosse players will be challenged, and it's going to be extremely hard to make a Olympic team based off of this discipline, because it's going to pull your athleticism from every aspect of who you are and what you thought was possible. You're running like 6-7 miles in a sixes game. That's not normal for a lacrosse player, especially an attacker or a defender. So having that opportunity to just be an athlete's voice was a privilege that I didn't take for granted. It was 6 years in the making, calling different countries at different time zones to speak with their teams and their athletes to put something together that the IOC and the Olympics could be really, really excited about in LA. And, you know, when I got that phone call from our CEO that lacrosse made it to the LA Olympics, like, Terry, I can't tell you the last time I cried that hard and just like tears of happiness, knowing that, you know, my 6-year-old self that would go to the corner store and get the newspaper during the Olympics and cut out all the Olympic medals and make that scrapbook, and always wondered, like, why not lacrosse, to be a part of that group that made sure that it was LA Olympics needs lacrosse was probably the proudest moment in my lacrosse career. So boy, do I wish I was younger to be able to be a part of that team. But to think about the athletes that are going to represent lacrosse on that stage is just something that's so incredible.
Was there a part of you that thought about trying to hang on for 3 more years?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Every day, you know, you get out of bed and you're like, oh, are things going to feel normal? Are the knees and the ankles going to crack and you're going to be fine? But I just think at this level, that style of lacrosse, you have to be playing at a speed that, you know, no one can catch you. So Lacrosse Canada has a lot better players than me at this point, and I'm so excited to see what they're going to be able to achieve.
So the answer to this question is the preceding 25 minutes of this conversation. But to be more explicit with the final question of this interview, what advice would you give to a player who is aspiring to have a playing career like what you did?
I would just say, always go back to, and like, even when I reflect on this, when you ask me this question, Terry, I just get like chills, but always remember that lacrosse is a special sport. It's something that is so different than any other sport that's out there right now. Like, it was gifted to us by the Haudenosaunee people that created this sport. And I just think about that every time I pick up my lacrosse stick, or every time I had a chance to compete before anything else. Just the gratitude to be receiving this sport and to be able to play it in a way that you can be proud. And I think anytime you can walk off a field with no regrets, you can be disappointed, you can be heartbroken, but if you can be able to walk off that field and know that you prepared in a way that you didn't let your teammates down, you didn't let your coaches down, then you know you're not letting yourself down. And I just think that's my advice to all the young lacrosse players out there. There's a bigger picture within lacrosse, and that stands outside of what you do and who you are, but it has everything to do with the teammate you are and the person that you are. And I think that's what makes some of the best lacrosse players so special. It's not necessarily their wins or what they achieved on the floor or on the field, but you always talk about those best lacrosse players over time as being some of the most incredible people you've ever met. And I just think that's a really important reminder for these young players as they're going up into their next chapters.
Spoken like a consummate teammate, and an incredible note to end on. Dana Dobie, congratulations on an incredible playing career. It's been a privilege to cover your career over the last 20 years, and can't wait to continue to see what you do in these coaching and leadership positions going forward.
I appreciate you, Terry, and I just thank Inside Lacrosse so much for all the coverage and promoting women's lacrosse players all around the world, and not just here in the U.S., and the coverage and how you guys have continued to help push and grow the sport is something I really admire. So thanks so much for this chat and for giving the opportunity to say thank you to the sport and to thank all my teammates and coaches and mentors that have allowed me to play this game as long as I was able to. So looking forward to the future and can't wait to be a huge fan.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.